say good afternoon. Close enough.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'd like to make two introductions. Jeffrey Kosak is a member of the board of Candlewood and a director of its subsidiary, Forestall Santa Barbara. He'll be making the argument today. I'd also like to introduce to the court Ralph Schmidt, who's also a manager of Candlewood and a director of FSB.
Good morning. You're both welcome to the court.
Thank you. Your Honor, if I may.
Mr. Hunt.
I'd like to introduce Francisco Romano, who is with Pan American's legal department in Buenos Aires, and also with me is Tom Bridge, my associate.
And welcome to the court. Let me explain our light system. When I turn the lights on, you'll see 20 minutes in front of you.
Yes, sir.
And then that will count down, and you've reserved 5 minutes. So the light will stay green until you get to 5 minutes, and then it will turn yellow. And you can continue talking, but the yellow will indicate that your rebuttal time has started.
Fine, thank you. May it please the court, as a member of the governing board of plaintiffs, Candlewood Timber Group, LLC, a Delaware limited liability company, and a member of the New York Bar, it is an honor and privilege to appear before this court, whose decisions I have read all my professional life and which is so important to the American legal system. Indeed, the preeminence of the Delaware courts is important to this appeal, in fact, critical to it. Businesses with operations throughout the world organize themselves in Delaware in large part because of their high regard for the Delaware courts and their confidence in its adjudication of disputes that they may bring before it. At issue in this case is the flip side of that coin, which is a vital legal rule that's been reaffirmed a number of times by this court, just recently in United Phosphorus, that states that businesses that organize themselves in Delaware must be prepared to defend themselves in Delaware, except in rare cases when they can demonstrate overwhelming hardship for litigating here in Delaware. Moreover, Delaware is a highly convenient case forum for plaintiffs here, and as I will explain later in the argument, the alternative fora in Argentina are highly inconvenient for plaintiffs. We, the plaintiffs, are a Delaware LLC and its wholly owned Argentine subsidiary, and we appeal from a chancery court decision that not only finds that it's without equity jurisdiction, but goes on to bar us on grounds of forum non convenience from transferring and proceeding in superior court in this, our home forum of Delaware. As I reread this court's line of cases, reaffirming the heavy burden on a Delaware defendant seeking dismissal on forum non convenience, I was forcibly struck by how much simpler our case is for the maintenance of jurisdiction here in Delaware than those cases were. Unlike this court's cases of Eisen and Taylor and Warburg and Marlin, the whole line of cases in which none of the plaintiffs were citizens or residents of Delaware, and which nevertheless this court gradually expanded jurisdiction over the defendant that did have a connection with Delaware, so that, you know, now under Warburg and Marlin, the mere citizenship of the defendant as a Delaware citizen is sufficient, absent overwhelming hardship. Here we have one of the plaintiffs, a Delaware company, the other its wholly owned subsidiary, which as such naturally comes to Delaware as well for justice. And so there's, in that sense, it's a very easy case. Now, in addition, the defendant herein isn't just a Delaware company that's happened to register here. It's a company that's a Delaware LLC that's majority owned by another Delaware company, and it's a member of the global BP family, which has long shown a preference for Delaware citizenship for its companies, and which has numerous companies here in Delaware that are citizens today. Finally, the plaintiffs here aren't asserting some oddball statutory claims such as maybe in Taylor, where there were broad equity powers under a special corporate statute of a foreign jurisdiction. It's asserting garden variety contract and tort claims, including claims of fraudulent misrepresentation, breach of contract, and negligence, just the kinds of claims that courts all over the world hear every day and which are, you know, ordinarily considered transitory claims. While it is true that much of the activity complained of occurred in Argentina, not all of it did. For instance, there were misrepresentations that were communicated directly and indirectly to plaintiffs in our New York office, and some of the consequences of defendants' breaches of contract and misrepresentations are alleged to be damage to the U.S. business that's integrated with that down in Argentina. So it isn't even a case where all of the causes of action, all of the underlying circumstances occur abroad. In short, this is a transnational dispute between international companies, which are citizens on both sides of Delaware, and it's quite naturally litigated in their home courts here in Delaware. Perhaps realizing that it had no chance of defeating plaintiffs' choice of forum by directly moving for forum known convenience in the Chancery Court, defendant devised a stratagem. Instead of doing so, it immediately filed, after we filed in Delaware, an extraordinary original action in the Argentine Supreme Court, in which it argued that the very filing of the action by plaintiffs in Delaware was so threatening that it was forced to suspend oil and gas exploration development on plaintiffs' property, and then extensively lobbied the federal and provincial governments to join in efforts to have the Argentine court somehow provide for exclusive jurisdiction. In doing so, it can hardly have escaped the defendant's notice that while Delaware is convenient to plaintiffs, an Argentine forum is highly inconvenient and disadvantageous, particularly in litigation against the second largest oil company in Argentina, which is the defendant, and whose minority owner is controlled by one of the wealthiest families in Argentina. Indeed, the inconvenience of Argentina as a forum has been exacerbated by procedural complications created by the filing of a first one and then even a second action now pending in Argentina against plaintiffs by defendant, and by the inflammatory nature of defendants' characterizations of plaintiffs and their legal actions in Delaware in the filings in Argentina.
Let me interrupt for a moment. Where did the trial court go wrong in saying that a significant issue here is going to be a question of physical damage to land in Argentina?
Your Honor, there are questions as to damage to trees and dumping of soil and whatnot in Argentina. But those are all issues for expert testimony that we can have here as well as in Argentina. There's no need to have the court physically inspect what happened there. It's a garden variety damage case. We're not looking for a ruling on title to property or anything. And if you go to the Restatement Second Conflicts of Law, it's now the rule that this kind of an action is really a contract action where the defendant promised, if it came on our property, to indemnify us for damages. Damages occurred, and now we're seeking expert testimony and then a judgment on what damages are owed. In addition, Your Honor, there are causes of action such as fraudulent misrepresentation that they induced us to enter into those contracts by promising us that they'd do things the right way and didn't. And again, that's just a garden variety, transitory cause of action. What did they promise? What did they do? What are the consequences? Do they all add up or don't they? And we're both Delaware citizens. And
so you're saying that there won't be any need for a view of the premises?
None, Your Honor. In fact, as we attached to our complaint three studies that were done, reports by a noted Oregon expert who went down and reviewed what happened there. And we attached it to the complaint to underline the point that a judge or a jury can't go on the property and just view it and see what had happened. They have to read what an expert says. This is extensive damage. It covers many miles, and it has to be quantified. And this is something that's done in the courts every day, not by going out to view it, but by reading expert reports, by reviewing schematics and maps, and having a duel of the experts possibly on just what the precise consequences are.
Thank you.
Well, having set the stage in Argentina, defendant finally came back to the Delaware court, and here it argued only half-heartedly that it would face overwhelming hardship here defending the action, but with more enthusiasm and supported by ex cathedra remarks by the Argentine government filings in the Argentine proceedings.
Counsel, help me out for a minute. Isn't it correct? I believe that the court below did rule on forum nonconvenience grounds.
Yes, Your Honor.
And your argument as to that ruling is that it was erroneous because there was no showing of, I forget what the term is, extreme hardship.
Overwhelming hardship.
Nor could there be, since the defendant has litigated in the United States.
That was certainly one of those.
But there was also, was there not, a jurisdictional ruling?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, there wasn't a jurisdictional ruling by the chancellor below. There was, on equity you're talking about?
No, not on equity, on the ground that the government of Argentina has an interest in this dispute of such a character that it must be determined or resolved by the Argentine court.
Well, there was a discussion on that. There wasn't really a holding on that. In fact, the issue had been briefed extensively by both parties, whether the Taylor case...
What was the status of the court's, or how would you characterize the court's dealing with that issue, if not a ruling?
Well, what it said is that because of the significant interests of the Argentine government, interests is what it says, the Argentine courts may have exclusive jurisdiction over this dispute, and then it cites to Taylor in a footnote.
Well,
it doesn't reach a conclusion below, and in fact, Your Honor...
Excuse me. Let's look at page 17 in response to Justice Jacobs' question. What you see on page 17 of the Chancellor's opinion under conclusion is, for the foregoing reasons, the plaintiff's claims are dismissed based on lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Then the alternative holding is forum nonconvenience. I think Justice Jacobs is saying, what's the basis for the lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
The lack of subject matter jurisdiction is lack of equity jurisdiction, Your Honor. In other words, there were really two things that the Chancellor held. One is that we were in the wrong Delaware court. You know, we had come into his court with broad equitable claims and for injunctive relief and what have you, to stop future activities by the defendant.
You're regarding the ruling by the Chancellor as a law equity issue.
Well, that's clearly, Your Honor, what he does. He hit the first part of his opinion.
That's a yes?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that ruling is erroneous, you contend?
Your Honor, we contend that it was a close question and that it's really not the vital point for us as plaintiffs. In other words, if this court were to hold that there's no equity jurisdiction but that we can go and pursue our remedy at law in Delaware, that would not be a bad result for us. The only equity relief that we sought, originally we sought very broad equity relief, but defendant went down to Argentina and said, well, this is outrageous, you know, they're interfering with our business down here just by filing. So we backed off, and we limited our equitable relief to specific performance of one contract provision that allowed us to require comprehensive insurance by the defendant. And the Chancellor perhaps rightfully said, look, at this point, what you're really looking for are damages. And you're not in, my court isn't the right court.
Okay, and so the real gravamen of your appeal is the forum nonconvenience dismissal.
Yes.
And to the extent the court was discussing or addressing the interests of the government of Argentina, that you regard as simply one factor that influenced the court to decide the way it did.
Yes, Your Honor. Exactly. In fact, you know, getting to the court's analysis, our feeling is that it has numerous errors of both findings of fact and also application of the law. And on the application of the law, the errors include just that the Chancellor considered not only overwhelming hardship to the defendant, which is all that he's supposed to consider under a forum nonconvenience analysis, but he, for instance, balanced the interests of Argentina versus Delaware, which in Marland, for instance, you flatly said isn't a consideration, and so he imported factors that he shouldn't have.
And your point on that issue is that Argentina really has no interest in this controversy properly understood, because it's basically a controversy between two private parties involving a transitory cause or causes of action.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not a sovereign interest in a sovereign resource.
That's right, Your Honor. They have at most a very indirect interest in the result. And in fact, in Eisen, where there was an argument by the defendant, there might be an inconsistent judgment as to someone they could normally have brought in as a third-party defendant. This court said, well, even that, you know, in this circumstance isn't sufficient for to rise to overwhelming hardship. Here there's no argument by anyone that the Argentine government or the province are going to be, contributing money on this thing. The only argument is that somehow they want to foster oil and gas activity. And furthermore, it's absolutely clear-cut under the statutes and the practice of the defendant, the commercial practice, that private parties enter into contracts, the concessionaire and the landowner, and the point of those contracts is to govern their relationship. And having done so here, the defendant shouldn't be heard that, well, there has to be a gloss on that by some governmental court in Argentina.
But for better or for worse, the government of Argentina has asserted in the courts of Argentina that it does have an interest.
Yes, Your Honor.
You argue that it doesn't have a cognizable interest for purposes of this litigation.
Yes, Your Honor.
If we were to rule that way, there still remains the possibility that the courts of Argentina could disagree. And then where are we?
Your Honor, that is a possibility, and it troubled the chancellor below. First of all, we don't have that in front of us yet. In fact,
Suppose we do have.
Yeah, but if you did, Your Honor, I think that's when we go to Taylor and to the Tennessee Coal case and all the others that are cited in Taylor and distinguished. In other words, the long line of cases that says that Delaware can hear a transitory action even if a foreign jurisdiction purports to localize that. As long as it's a contract tort kind of claim for damages, not equitable relief of a special localized, arguably localized nature, and where there's no specific statutory hook that would bar it, it's a very easy case for this court to say, I don't care what you say down in Argentina, this is our case. And in fact, that's just in Tennessee Coal, for instance, and Souris, which is cited in that case. There were foreign states, sister states, that had laws that said, look, we want this tort action, say a workman's comp action.
Well, the short answer, if I understand it, is that if we rule your way and the court in Argentina rules the government's way, then there will be two conflicting rulings, and so be it.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the long and the short.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Kozak, you have about 3.5 minutes of your total time.
I'll reserve the balance. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Hunter. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. There was a Rule 60B motion filed yesterday afternoon in the Chancery Court, and I think a copy was sent to Your Honors. I just became aware of this yesterday afternoon, and I can only address it to a certain extent, but I would like to tell you what I know, and we will, of course, address it in the Chancery Court when the motion is brought on. The proceeding identified in the 60B motion is not a proceeding in the United States court. It's, in fact, the first part of the proceeding took place in Geneva, Switzerland. It's an international dispute. It derives from a treaty entered into between Argentina and the United States, and that treaty specifies that the claimant, and in this case that would be British Petroleum and Pan American, as investors in the Pan American branch, that's a capital B branch, that's a type of legal entity in Argentina. And that treaty provides that you must either litigate with the Argentine government in the Argentine courts, or you can go to an international arbitration proceeding. But there is no proceeding in a U.S. court. And as I say, we will deal with that in due course in the court.
Well, Mr. Hunt, let me just tell you, speaking for myself and not the court, it's my understanding that the Court of Chancery has jurisdiction to enforce judgments, but that to the extent a judgment is on appeal to this court, the Court of Chancery is divested of jurisdiction to act on the motion that we got a copy of, unless someone files a motion in our court asking us to remand the matter to the Court of Chancery. So I guess if we get a motion like that, we'll rule on it, or if someone disagrees with my understanding of appellate practice and procedure, they could proceed in the Court of Chancery at their peril. But in the meantime, we'll just go forward with the appeal.
Okay. Your Honor, if I may then turn to my main presentation. I really, I think, have only 3 points. The first point, and the main point that I would seek to make, is that the court below made a careful analysis of a well-developed factual record and applying the correct legal standard as laid out by this court numerous times, the court below determined that requiring Pan American to litigate this dispute in the courts of Delaware would constitute an overwhelming hardship. Indeed, the court went so far as to say that it made no sense to litigate this dispute outside of Argentina. Now, this court has previously stated on many occasions that the grant of a motion to dismiss on grounds of form nonconvenience unquestionably lies within the sound discretion of the court deciding the motion, and that this court will affirm such an exercise of discretion when the findings and conclusions of the lower court are supported by the record and are the product of an orderly and logical deductive process.
Now, help us understand where the jurisprudence in this state is going with international and multinational corporations. You know, if we look at the Eisen case and recent pronouncements by this court, in this particular case, identify, if you would, two or three of the factual basis for the conclusion that it's an overwhelming hardship.
The main point, Your Honor, is the fact that, and it really sort of leads into the lack of subject matter jurisdiction, but this regulation of oil and gas and forestry in Argentina is so central to the operations down in that country and to the judicial system and to the government system that it's abhorrent to them to have another jurisdiction regulating. And they've said that in black and white. We've quoted from the various statements. Going beyond that, as the Chancellor found in his findings, all of the evidence is down there. This is that case where you probably do want a view of the premise. And he said, yeah, sure, you can say a video camera is a substitute, but that's all it is. It's a substitute. The witnesses are down there. The documents are down there. Somebody's going to have to get down on the ground in order to decide this case. The courts in Argentina and the government in Argentina have found that this is a case where you cannot have some globalizing remedy or system, and have so stated it.
Do you agree that the cause of action that was asserted in the Court of Chancery and that would be asserted in the Superior Court if there's no equity jurisdiction is a transitory cause of action?
They seek to make it look that way, Your Honor.
Is it or isn't it?
Well, I don't think it is, because I don't think it exists. I think that it's so locked up with the system of regulation in Argentina that you must operate under that system. And
how and why?
Well, for example, Your Honor, we have the statute or law down in Argentina that says when you get into a dispute like this, one possibility, and their expert admits it, Professor Lipchinoff testified to it, one possibility is to say, we can't agree. You, the oil and gas concessionaire, can just buy the land that's in dispute here. And we have filed just such an action, because if we can't agree, then that's the option. Just take the land, and the laws in Argentina permit that.
And then would this litigation in Delaware become moot?
I think it would become moot, because they would have gotten whatever the fair value of their land was. And I think their expert admits that.
And what's the status of that proceeding? When is that going to be concluded?
I don't know. When we were in the lower court, there was some contest about whether we had filed in the right court. We had got confirmation that we were in the right court, so presumably that will now proceed.
In Argentina, Your Honor?
In Argentina, Your Honor, yes.
Let's back up for a minute. You may be ahead of me. As I understand it, this was simply an action for breach of contract to supply an insurance policy. The court said, well, that's not really a viable claim, and it's not an equity claim because there's an adequate remedy at law, and namely a suit for damages for the harm that's already been done to the land. Now, that is already that act has already taken place, and the issue is whether or not it generates liability. What is the interest of the government of Argentina in regulating that dispute, and how is that interest of such paramount importance that what would seem to be a garden variety tort or contract suit couldn't be brought in Delaware?
Yes, Your Honor. I think, again, I'll refer to Professor Litvinoff. He has said that if, as a result of the remedy ordered by a foreign court, it becomes the job that the concessionaire has to perform becomes more expensive, and it's more than was anticipated at the time of the concession, they actually may have the right to go back against the government for financial relief. Or it could be that the prospect of damages being ordered by a foreign court is so onerous that the oil and gas concessionaire says, I'm just not going to do anymore. I'm not going to drill any more wells. And then the government of Argentina and the province of Salta lose substantial revenues upon which they're very dependent.
So if your client claims that might be the effect, that has the impact of ousting a Delaware court of jurisdiction over what would ordinarily be a simple contract or tort case?
In a form of nonconvenience.
If I have to pay damages because I did damage to your land, my goodness, that might force me to stop doing business in Argentina, which then triggers a paramount interest of the government of Argentina so as to block this lawsuit?
The government of Argentina has expressed strong interest in this, and that's the basis for it, Your Honor. The prospect that the oil and gas will not be developed, and I think also Professor Litvinov concedes the possibility that the government may actually have to change its deal with the oil and gas concessionaire to give back some money because it's become more expensive to develop.
What happens if they litigated this in Argentina and the plaintiffs were right? I assume it's theoretically possible that a plaintiff could win in Argentina and then someone would have to pay money. Wouldn't the consequences be the same?
The government would be there in that case. They would be part of the case. They are part of the case now as it's going forward in Argentina.
But they're not willing to be part of the case in Delaware.
They have shown no willingness to do that, Your Honor.
And so your answer is that the government of Argentina would like to defend whatever interest it has in the courts of Argentina.
Yes, sir. Senator, if I could, I'll switch to my second point, which has to do with the releases in the forum selection clauses. Did Your Honor have another question?
Just one question. It is the ruling of the Chancellor on the forum nonconvenience issue. Is it really, in substance, a ruling that there's overwhelming hardship, or is it actually a ruling that because the government of Argentina has a paramount interest, it would be inappropriate, unseemly, pick your adverb, for this court to go forward?
Your Honor, he presented it as a decision. He uses the term overwhelming hardship repeatedly in the opinion.
He used it, but what is the hardship?
Well,
to litigate here.
Your Honor, I'm explaining. This is a dispute that involves real estate, the condition of the real estate. All of the evidence is down there in Argentina, and there are parties who will claim an interest in this who are in Argentina and not required to come up here to litigate.
That may make it inconvenient. That may prevail if this were a motion to stay on forum nonconvenience grounds, although even that is questionable. But why would it constitute overwhelming hardship with the result that it justifies dismissal of the lawsuit?
Your Honor, I go back to the Chancellor's opinion and what he found there. He went through each of the factors very carefully and laid out his reasons and determined that, in his view, it constituted overwhelming hardship. The second point.
You agree his primary holding was based on jurisdiction. That was his alternate holding.
That's right. He did reach both of them, though. I mean, in the interest of judicial efficiency, having gone through two arguments and how many ever briefs it was, he went ahead and decided both. And as this court did in the Phillips Petroleum, I think the Miller versus Phillips Petroleum case, having done all that work, it really didn't make any sense to kick it over to the Superior Court and say, now you start from scratch. Forestal has received a number of payments from Pan American as a result of alleged damage to its land, resulting from Pan American's operations. In exchange for those payments, they have executed a series of releases. And those releases not only release a broad array of claims, but they also have clauses providing for exclusive jurisdiction of the Argentine courts over disputes between the parties regarding the alleged damages flowing from the work that was done. Now, if Your Honor looks at the Gill affidavit, he points out that even seismic activities, which is what those releases related to, they necessarily include land clearing, road construction, and the building of temporary camps, which these are the very things that these people are complaining about now. it defies logic to say that somebody can come back 5 years or how many ever years after the fact, look at damaged land, and say, no, that occurred during seismic and as opposed to over here. I mean, there are too many footprints on this in the process. So what we're saying, and I think the court below found, is that part of this dispute unquestionably has to be litigated in the courts of Argentina. Why not litigate the whole thing? Argentina has rules against claim splitting. Their expert concedes that, and that's all I have to say on that point. The last point is the exclusive jurisdiction point. And their own expert concedes that all of their claims are predicated on Argentine law. It's a heavily regulated area of Argentine law. Various branches of the Argentine government have made clear how important they view this dispute and how important it is for them to have it decided down there. And I would also note that this is a dispute over real estate, which under the treaties of Montevideo of 1889 and 1940 is specifically consigned to the exclusive jurisdiction of the Argentine courts. I note that appellant's counsel in his opening argument said, well, we're not talking about title to property. Well, we certainly are. If you look in Mr. Dykstra's report, which they attached to the complaint, I think it's at page 3 or 4, he says in there, there's a dispute over who owns the property that's allegedly been damaged. So somebody's going to have to decide who owns the property before we can even get to the question of whether it was damaged. The government of Argentina, the province of Salta, are both parties to this. Their expert, Professor Litvinov, concedes that in that event, Argentina has exclusive jurisdiction over the dispute. Their expert concedes that. Now, the court below said that the courts in Argentina may have exclusive jurisdiction. I don't know that he closed the circle on that. We think that under the circumstances, if Your Honor looks at the record, it's clear that, as in the LSI case, courts in Argentina must have exclusive jurisdiction of this.
Well, that goes back to Justice Jacobs' question. How do you read the Chancellor's opinion? One way to read his primary holding is, this is a tort claim, it's a contract claim, you're not seeking equitable relief. Therefore, no jurisdiction. Alternatively, Delaware is an inconvenient forum. Another reading is, arguably, Argentina has exclusive jurisdiction, you're in the wrong court. Alternatively, it's an inconvenient forum. It appears, the Chancellor said, no jurisdiction because they were tort claims and contract claims, although he makes reference to the government of Argentina. Is there any fair reading of the Chancellor's opinion that he said no jurisdiction because exclusive jurisdiction is in Argentina?
I don't think he went that far. I don't think he ruled it out. I just think he felt, I don't have to decide that. I've already decided that this case should be dismissed. He clearly says, he clearly is leaning that way in the opinion, no question about it. But I don't think he closed the loop and said this is an independent ground. I wish that he had, because frankly, I think that's a very, very strong ground, and it puts an end to this. The last point, Your Honor, I'd make is this, that Forestal, and you know, they added Candlewood as a party to this because Candlewood's a Delaware entity. Candlewood's got nothing to do with this dispute, and we said in our briefs in the court below and in this court that they only added Candlewood to try and give this some Delaware heft, make it look like it had something to do with Delaware. They don't deny it. They can't point to anything about Candlewood that's tied to this litigation, except ownership of some other company, which is an Argentinian company. In any event, they went down to Argentina between 1998 and 2000, or 1997 and 1999, and went into a remote area known as the Acambuco area, and they bought 250,000 acres of forest for less than $1 million. And now they're claiming that a few alleged intrusions on the absolute edges of their property has resulted in property damage of $17 million. That's mind-boggling. Now, one can imagine why they don't want that claim examined very close to home, because it's got to be clearly blown out of proportion. Now, my friend would tell you that there's no longer such a thing as the doctrine of foreign nonconvenience in the state of Delaware. I hope he's wrong. This court has previously stated, as I said, when the proper case presents itself, and the facts justify it, the doctrine of forum nonconvenience is indeed alive. The Chancellor is an experienced jurist. He's had scores of forum nonconvenience motions before him over the years, and he knows when the proper one is presented. and he applied the proper standard. And for that reason, we ask the court to affirm it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if I could respond first to the question of oil and gas localization. This wasn't really reached directly by the lower court because it wasn't necessary in the Chancellor's view. He had a form of no convenience and a no equity hook. And so there isn't a very extensive record on his opinion on that thing. There's sort of a passing remark. If you go to the expert affidavits of Dr. Litvinov, which we put in on Argentine law, it's very clear, for instance, on page A71 and again on page A196 and 197, that under the scheme down there, the concessionaire and the landholder can contract. And they can contract on damages because, after all, the concessionaire has a right to go for the oil, but the property owner has a right to preserve his property. So really, we have a contract dispute. And there's nothing in there that talks about intervention by the Argentine government or the province. This is a plain vanilla agreement between two private parties so that each can pursue their own businesses.
And what's your response to the suggestion that Candlewood doesn't have a substantial interest in this litigation?
We disagree strongly. We've alleged in our complaint that all the activities approving those contracts with the defendant down in Argentina were at the direction of the plaintiff parent up here, the Delaware company, and that there are severe consequences to the business of the parent because it's an integrated operation to what it's doing up here. In particular, what we allege is that the parent's business requires certification, a green stamp, like organic food. The timber has to be viewed up here as harvested properly, or we can't sell it. And the promises that were made to us, the representations by the defendant, were that they would do things in the right way, and they didn't. And as a result, we may not be, and in fact we haven't been certified on our property that's impacted by their activities. There's a direct impact not on the sub, which owns the property, but on the parent. And the misrepresentations were addressed to us as well as to the sub, knowing by the defendant that we would hear it and that we would be the ones making the decision. Of course, we also have an indirect interest as the parent company.
What is your response to the argument that this court would have to decide the Court of Chancery or the Superior Court would have to decide who owns the property in order to resolve the tort or contract claim?
Your Honor, first of all, they came to us asking permission, so there's really no dispute about most of the property. In other words, they knew that it was. Second of all, we can put in expert testimony showing the catastrophic maps as to the property lines. And, it's really a makeshift argument. They dealt with us because they knew we were the property owner. Now they're quibbling with where exactly the property line is just to make an argument up here.
Okay. Can you condense that response into a single sentence? I'm not sure what you're saying.
Your Honor, I'm saying that there isn't any title dispute, first of all.
And we can determine that from the record as a matter of law?
If it's raised, we can put in expert testimony on showing where the property boundaries are and where...
We can determine as a matter of law that there's no title dispute?
Your Honor, it's not a matter of law issue. It's a factual issue. This really wasn't raised in any affidavits by the defendant. They simply referred to a remark by our expert on damages that someone had told him that there was a property issue as to where the line had to be drawn. He was an engineer.
So there's no record support for
no
the assertion.
No record support for this being an issue.
Thank you. I'm afraid all of your time is up.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
The court appreciates your arguments. We're going to take this matter under advisement. In the event that the Court of Chancery concludes it does have jurisdiction to act on that motion, it's incumbent upon the lawyers for all parties to let us know so we don't decide something that become moot or confused in some way. And the court will now take a brief recess.
Please rise.